Welcome to another episode of Pardon My Enthusiasm, a horror podcast. Film, spooks, controversy, death, and crime, where the eerie is discussed. I'm your host, Damaris Montufar. Today's episode, Chamberlain, A Dingo Ate My Baby. So today's kind of an interesting one. I've been doing a lot of, remodeling in my house. And so I've been essentially kicked out of the room that I usually work in. It was kind of like a craft room with whatever, but we've transformed it into a bit of a home gym, especially with COVID stuff. I really miss going to the gym. And so we've just picked up some pieces. And so now I'm in our spare bedroom, which does not have a desk for me yet. I'm currently waiting. We have a desk in here, but it has the television on it, which my partner uses as a monitor for their computer. So I am waiting for the little doodad for the television. Then I can use the table. But for now, we are on top of my piano. I have a keyboard and I just hooked the mic onto the frame, not of the actual keyboard, but the thing that holds the keyboard, and my laptop is on top of the keyboard. So this is kind of weird, but during this process I also got myself a new chair. It is worldly more comfortable than the chair I was using before, which was an old dining table that was literally falling apart, absolutely no support. This thing is heaven. I am very excited. But back to the real subject of the Chamberlains and A Dingo Ate My Baby. I don't actually think that needs a lot of introduction. I mean, who has not heard it in some shape or form? A Dingo's Got My Baby, A Dingo Ate My Baby, whichever it may be. It is literally pop culture meh. But the actual case is actually not that known of. When I was looking into this, I was like, yeah, I know the Dingo Ate My Baby. And that's just kind of it. A dingo ate someone's baby, like end of story. That was kind of finite for me. And in going through all of the information for this thing, it was like, oh man, it's just a famous line with a super somber backstory. So today we are discussing the 1980s disappearance, you just heard my cat, and the understood death of Azaria Chamberlain, a 9-week almost 10-week-old infant who was dragged away by a dingo while on a family holiday that led to the public and court conviction of the parents, Lindy and Michael Chamberlain. This story has a lot to it, but I'll do my best to unload it lightly. In preparation, I watched Meryl Streep's film on the story, listened to a podcast dedicated to the case, although I didn't actually listen to the whole thing, and overall did a lot of reading. Now, let's get to it. First up on our people is going to be Michael Lee Chamberlain, born February 27, 1944, in Christchurch, New Zealand. He was experienced in different aspects of journalism, but his main profession was being a pastor for a Seventh-day Adventist church. He moved to Australia in 65 to pursue his religious drive. Alice Lynn Chamberlain Craigton, was born March 4th, 1948 in Whakatane, New Zealand, but she went by Lindy, which is what we will be calling her from now on. Her family moved to Australia in 69, and as practicing Seventh-day Adventist, they met Michael Chamberlain, and they were married later that very year. The couple had two boys, Aiden in 1973 and Reagan in 1976, but family and friends reported that the pair really wanted a daughter. So on June 11, 1980, they welcomed daughter Azaria. That was probably one of the fastest, character introductions. We are literally already at the event, just because it's such a thicky event, you know. But August 16, 1980, the Chamberlain family went on a holiday, camping, up to Uluru, I'm really vibing with this. Lura, also known as Eyre Rock, a massive sandstone rock formation in the most southern part of the Northern Territory of Central Australia. The original plan was to visit Darwin, the capital of the Northern Territory, because Michael wanted to go fishing for barramundi. It's a sea bass. But Lindy wanted to see Lura to reminisce on a trip when she was younger. I believe she was about 16 years old. So, 3 days camping at Uluru, then fishing. The following day, August 17, the family of five was enjoying their holiday, feeding the local wildlife, including dingoes. And around 8 p.m., after baby Azara had been put down to sleep, they heard a cry. Thereafter, Azaria was never seen again. Reports state that the Chamberlains went to check their tent and saw a dingo running off with something. The baby was missing from her bassinet, so that was an obvious conclusion, and so a search began. In the tent, investigators found prints, but after hours of searching, nothing was found in the immediate area. Come August 24, a Wally Goodwin was the one who found Azaria's white jumpsuit, booties, nappy, and singlet. Real honest, I'm not 100% sure where a lot of these things are. I don't have kids, but we've got pictures of them on the Instagram, and they were bloodstained and found near some rocks at the base of Uluru, about 4,000 meters from the tent. October 1st and 2nd, the police get all of their statements from the Chamberlains, as well as conducting a search on their car. The car turned up some random patterns of blood, but nothing immediately concerning. Dennis Barnett, Alice Springs magistrate and coroner, agreed with the Chamberlains' report of Azaria being taken by a dingo in both December 1980 and January 1981. Although it looks that officially the family was cleared of suspicion on February 20, but that a Ken Brown wanted to keep testing the baby's jumpsuit. This court hearing was the first to be live broadcasted in Australia. I mean, this is a big thing, a baby being stolen by a local wildlife. Like, it's weird. The timeline at lindychamberlain.com states that September 20 brought the Operation Orkra, where the Chamberlain home and all other witnesses were raided. November 20, 2 months later, the Northern Territory Supreme Court in Darwin goes against the original findings, something called squashed in English law, and decided to go ahead for a new one, specifically looking at Lindy Chamberlain for murder. December 15, 1980, the initial inquest was opened in Alice Springs. February 2nd, 1982, the evidence was shuffled and filed, and Lindy was charged with murder. It wasn't until September 13th that the trial began, the trial of the century. To the sheer shock of the public, Lindy was super pregnant. During the entire proceedings, judgmental eyes were peering hard. For this trial, there was another coroner review. This person concluded that assuming it was a dingo is circumstantial, and instead that it was an elaborate setup by the Chamberlains because the area is known to have many dingoes. What is proposed is that they bloodied up her clothes and got it dirty and scattered it, that the baby was essentially dead the whole time, hid in a large camera bag. This was based on the supposed blood found in their car, and the story was that they slit her throat with scissors. The story goes as follows: Lindy killed Azaria by cutting her throat, hung around with the other campers while distracting her children, then claiming Azaria was taken by dingoes. While everyone searched, she got rid of the body. Part of the evidence was the blood mentioned before, found on the front seat, that apparently contained foetal hemoglobin, something found in babies 6 months and younger. Arguments against all this were witness statements and other science. A witness reported hearing a baby cry around the time Lindy said Azaria was taken, and they tested other blood, adult blood, and it too showed the fetal hemoglobin. So what gives, you know? I also read some stuff about random organic substances being tested that also glowed and whatnot. I actually have no idea if it glows, but it produced the same results as the adult blood and the fetal blood, so it really could be anything. They did tests to see if a dingo could take a baby, how their teeth would tear into things, etc. But October 29, a guilty verdict was handed to 8-month pregnant Lindy, and it came with a sentence of life imprisonment. Michael was also found guilty, 18-month suspended sentence for accessory after the fact. November 17th, while in police custody serving her life sentence, Lindy gave birth to her fourth child and second daughter, Kalia. She is sent to live with foster parents Wayne and Jenny Miller on April 29, 1983. Kalia would end up with new foster parents November 17th, on her birthday, with Dr. Owen and Jan Hughes. They tried getting it all appealed, seeing as they had already been found innocent once. You know, it's like, why would you put me through this again? But no dice. The federal court was first submitted in April 1983, but squashed in February 22nd, 1984, 2-3. Early 1986, a tourist, Englishman David Brett, fell and died while climbing Uluru. 8 days later, roughly January 31st, his body was found along with a little manatee jacket. This area was known to be dingo territory, a literal layer of dingoes. February 3rd is when word got out, and by the 5th, Lindy is asked to positively identify if that was Azaria's jacket from when she disappeared. It was. It was the missing jacket. And this was a fact that Lindy clung to when explaining Azaria being taken, but it was dismissed as a factual lie. This proved she was not lying. One of their big argument points was, well, where's that jacket? Found the other stuff, where's the jacket? And also, for people who are not familiar, because I was not, a manatee jacket is like a little knitted sweater looking thing. And it's just, she was dismissed as a liar. And this was really holding up to, it was this fact, this point that she's like, no, but the jacket, no, but the jacket, no, but the jacket. They're like, you're lying about the jacket, and here's the jacket. By the 7th, peeps were on it. Word was getting out. Senator Bob Collins got reporter Frank Alcorta to get on it, and he wrote an article all about the holes in Lindy's sentencing and threatened to put it out. They were like, bro, we're gonna print it unless Lindy is immediately released by noon or her case is at least opened and reevaluated publicly. In a speedy action, unlike anything that would happen in the US, major side eye being tossed right now, she is released and an inquiry is called. Bam! A side note, because I never mentioned it and I definitely would be worried about it, the other children, the two boys, are apparently with their grandparents right now. I'm not actually 100% sure if it's Lindy or Michael's parents, but all the same, they are safe, they are being cared for, and they're not in the foster system like Kalia is. But June 2nd, 1987, over a year later, the Chamberlains are cleared of all guilt by the Royal Commission's Justice, Trevor Morling. They are offered a pardon, but that is still, like, it still legally implicates them. It's just like, I acknowledge you did it, but like, I'm letting you off the hook. So we're not with it. October 21st, the Chamberlains are allowed to return to court in order to be completely cleared. Blah, 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 blah. I would fight that too. You can't just, like, when you think pardon, at least as an American, you think of Nixon. And I don't want to be Nixon. Not unless he's the Futurama Nixon. Then maybe we're here for it, but still. September 15, 1988, the Supreme Court of Darwin clears them absolutely. Aria was taken by dingoes. Some of the information that cleared them was police reports of large paw prints around the Chamberlain's tent, blood by the tent that wasn't tested, annoying, the bloodstains in the car that were determined to have possibly been sound deadening compound from a manufacturing overspray, canine hair, oh my gosh, around the tent and on Azaria's jumpsuit. And they didn't have dogs. Nobody there was like, yeah, I've got a dog. So it's like, As well as a bucket of information just about dingoes and their habits in the area. That's actually one of the things that super annoyed me about this case is, like, let's look at the history. Are there other reports of dingoes being dangerous in the area? Are there other reports of people being injured by dingoes? And we'll actually kind of touch on that a little more as we go. But specifically, Uluru of Ayers Rock Chief Ranger Derek Roth had been writing to the government urging a dingo call, like warning of imminent human tragedies. Roth noted that dingoes in the area were becoming increasingly aggressive, approaching and sometimes even biting people. Like, they were just like, "You're people, I'm a dingo, let's go, I'm like ready to square off." And that was 2 years prior. 2 years prior. So we're talking 78, roughly around there. So there was already reports that dingoes were kind of getting a little bold here, and they were still so willing to just dismiss the Chamberlains as being like crazy murderers. But going to the future, there are a lot of reports of dingoes grabbing kids. Literally so many. Like, just dingoes eating kids, dingoes grabbing kids, dingoes hurting humans. You will get a lot of results. The one that I read was of a nine-year-old boy being taken by a dingo. He was just like being dragged. There was some where like the dad saved the kids. Like, he just like ran after them. Like, he was able to get to them. But the Chamberlains, it was in the middle of the night. Like, it was dark outside. So if they would be bold enough, obviously this is a little more recent, but if they can take a nine-year-old boy, of course they're going to take an almost 10-week-old baby. It's a baby. Bro, it's... You lift a baby with one hand, you lift a 10-year-old with two hands. Like, come on. Another major, like, talking point in this entire case is the just crazy amount of bias, behavior, and media attack. This is actually why I went in the approach with this podcast in general. I love true crime. I'm one of those creepy kids. We're here for it. We're all there. We're all a part of it. You know, I listen to Morbid. I listen to Crime Junkie. And just, I also really like serialized ones. One of the ones I've been really enjoying is True Crime Bullshit. Definitely go listen. So I really wanted to be a part of that. But I also really, really love You Must Remember This. I love old Hollywood. I love cinema history. And in the blend of that, I just really became obsessed with how media takes crime, how media takes tragedy, and just somber events in general. And this really is the embodiment of that. A terrible tragedy that may have something dark alluring, although I highly doubt it. So there's my opinion on it. But just how the media, like, exploded. They were found innocent. And it's not to say that the people weren't still curious. I'm gonna say that the people involved in the case were like, you know what, this is still kind of fishy, I'm gonna look into it. But how the media ran with this, how they just demonized this family and ran them through, we will definitely be touching more on that as we get into the media side of this. Right now we're just talking about, I guess, what we're gonna call social media. Obviously they didn't have Facebook in the 80s, but newspapers and community, just the herd mentality of anger. We're going to get into that right now because, oh my gosh, here's some of the weird stuff that I read about this case. Inspector Michael Gilroy of the Northern Territory Police submitted the first police report. In his report, he stated having learned that Lindy thought Azaria was sick when she was born. During their time in the hospital, she had apparently come to believe that Azaria had phyloric cyanosis, bam, which causes vomiting and just other like gastrointestinal kind of issues. But the medical staff did not find any signs of this. The hospital staff also apparently heard Lindy mentioning that her boys had it and that she had healed them through a fall. No idea what that means. Literally no idea. The first time I read it, I think my brain was somewhere else and I was like, she healed them, magic, so she's a witch, let's run, we're here. I'm loving these theories of like women who are taking a stand for themselves being called witches. But no, she apparently healed them, and I'm just kind of like, okay. And don't get me wrong, I know plenty of parents that are like, oh yeah, my kids had this, I had this, I'm keeping an eye on it. So it's not unheard of for me, for her to be like, hey, my kids have this, I'm just worried. And it's fine if the staff thought otherwise, but I don't understand this fall thing whatsoever. The staff's comments were honestly very invasive, if I had to give it a word, just through and through. They mentioned that she did not feed Azaria for 8 hours. I'm not really sure what the, like, what context this is in. Like, she was born and she didn't feed her for 8 hours straight, or maybe she took 8 hours to sleep. I mean, I definitely know that people are like, hey, don't wake me up for feeding. Just give them formula, or I guess they'll pump or something. I just know I've heard of that kind of stuff before, so I don't know why she's being criticized for it. Maybe there's just something bigger. But just as a statement, I'm like, why are you guys criticizing this mother so hard? Like, Lindy is younger, and even if she's not younger, she just had a baby, you know, her body's tired. I don't understand why she's being criticized this way. But part of it is just that they were just pinning her to be this very uncaring parent, stating that she avoided doing the paperwork post-birth. I guess just like, here's the name, here's the signing, that she just didn't do it. But that's another thing I hear. People are like, oh yeah, we have to fill it out by 3 days later. We took up to those 3 days because we wanted to make sure we knew the baby before giving it a name. Brother, I feel that. I get it. I respect it. I'm definitely on that bandwagon of, if I have children, I kind of have like names I like, but I'm not gonna pick one because I feel like I have to get to know it and just be like, yo, bro, how is thy feeling? Do you feel this name? Yeah, that's probably very millennial of me, but whatever. During the check-ins, apparently Azaria was dressed in black. Lindy is also reported to wear black often, just in general. And the doctor during that checkup felt that Lindy did not behave accordingly to what they felt was motherly behavior. This same doctor is the one, apparently, there's just a lot of conflicting reports with a lot of this specifically, but that he is the doctor leading the belief behind Azaria's name. If you look into it, there are reports that according to either this doctor or some random man who was really into the reporting of this, that they looked up the name in the Dictionary of Names and Meanings, and it supposedly, we can fight about this later, Azaria means sacrifice in the wilderness, which is very specific, don't you think? I cannot with it. Some of the things I was also reading was that in the 80s, very kind of bold clothes was in for kids. So I will be sharing, or I already shared, I'm actually not sure, a picture of Azaria's dress, the specific one they're talking about. It is a black little dress with like a red ribbon trim. Super cute. I'm getting a lot of like Beetlejuice vibes from it. Very gothy. I'm here for it. And that was the style though. Apparently like edgy black clothing for kids was in. So we just don't understand why. But again, it's like there's some people and there's some things in general that don't mean anything unless they come from a certain person. I tell my partner that all the time, that sometimes they will get very fixated on something that upset them and we'll talk it out and I'm just like, why did it upset you when they did it? Because so-and-so did it the same thing pretty much and you were fine. Or, oh, it's not a huge deal, like we shouldn't judge someone for it, whatever. And here's the thing though, it's not always exactly the thing that is done, it is the person who does it. I don't generally have a lot of issues with most things. Like, I'm just generally a pretty laid-back person. I have a lot of opinions, but I'm not very easily angered. But there are some people who trigger me so much that they could be doing nothing. They could literally be doing nothing. And I'm like, oh my God, cannot stand them. And that's exactly what was happening to Lindy. It didn't matter what she was doing. It didn't matter how normal, how just a part of it was. She was doing it, and that was the problem. By the end of it, the couple was awarded $1.3 million, or Australian dollars, as compensation, but apparently that didn't even cover all of their legal fees. Some reports said that it covered a third, which I'm always like, okay, then what happens to the rest? I feel like all of their court fees should have been just like, you know what, brother, you ain't gonna pay this, and then the 1.3 was for the fact that they literally rang their existence through the mud and put a woman in jail. She couldn't spend those first year and some change. The baby was without her family. I mean, Michael was released obviously early. He just got to vibe and he got his family back. But she was stolen of those early years with her baby and just of time with her children. And he goes even just beyond it because it not only didn't cover their legal fees, it cost them even more, literally their relationship. Because come 1990, the couple was in ruins and Lindy asked for a divorce. I don't want to inherently say that because of the situation is why they split up. Maybe they just weren't a good match and like that's totally fine, but let's not pretend that tragedy doesn't tear people apart. You see that all the time in families, like their child dies and they just don't quite know how to fit anymore. It's like you're always going to feel pain with that person. I have very close feelings with that kind of a sentiment, that there's just some people that are always going to remind you of painful times, you know, even if you move on from the event, you've overcome it. Like obviously they stayed strong and together through the actual event, but that freedom was probably just overwhelming. They're still dealing with so much backlash. June 27, 1991, they are legally divorced. Kalia lives with Michael at her request, and Reagan lives with Lindy at his request, and Aiden divides his time living with them equally. So just in my head, I'm thinking 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there, so on and so forth. Although both parents do see both of their children, I'm not 110 on what Lindy and Michael's relationship was like, but while each had one child almost exclusively and one shared between them, they did interchange. Don't know quite how it worked, but they had their healthiness within it. July 1992, Collier requests to live with her mother full-time, and marking April 28, 1993, when Lindy is granted full custody of both Collier and Reagan. I really like to think about this. I wonder why Collier wanted to go with her father. Maybe it is partially because she spent her first couple years with him more than her mother. They had to build that bond. I'm not really sure. And I know that Michael got remarried, although I'm not 110 when it was. I know I read it, but I have to be really honest. He wasn't really my focal point when I was reading this. I feel like he got off pretty well. All the damnation and the like harshest parts of these attacks were all on Lindy. So part of me is like, maybe she didn't like the new mom. I'm not really sure. I mean, it's none of my business to really speculate on it. It's just interesting to think about. And December 13, 1995, which I'm just about to give you guys my age, essentially. I was a couple days old when this happened. A third inquest settled for... my words are just caught on me right now. It's not even that big of a deal, but they settled for unknown as Azaria's death. And this kind of kept the case open. June 12, 2012, coroner Elizabeth Morris finally settled for death by dingoes. She first started her inquest in December 16, 2011, and Azaria's death would be legally recognized as an attack by dingoes. This was a pretty exhausting case to read on. There's a lot of information. Obviously, this thing went on for like 35, 40 years, but there was a lot of repetitive stuff and just, it was just exhausting. There's really no other way to put it. It was exhausting to research, but a good kind of exhausting, like that, very exhilarating. As far as the media, I tried going through a lot of the media related to this, but that would have been a little too much. Not only have I really done a bad job at scheduling research time and recording time along with my other lively duties, but there was just a lot. Made for TV specials and opera, which sounds so cool because I'm obsessed with theater. A book, I didn't read it, although I did watch the movie based on the book. And of course, as we mentioned at the beginning, all of the pop culture references to the show. I mean, you're literally talking about the Rugrats movie having a reference to it. Like when they disappear and they're giving the interview, they're just like, we need to find our baby Tommy and Dill and like whatever and everything. And they're just like, do you think a dingo ate a baby? And like, I don't think that's actually how they said it. It's been a long time. But to think that a kid's show, a kid's film, whatever, brings it up, like that's how ingrained it is to this. And it's wild. But a dingo's got a baby, all of that. It's just, it's everywhere. Oh my gosh. I even tried listening to the Serialized podcast all about this, which I also mentioned in the introduction. It's actually not that long. The episodes are like 30, 35 minutes. There's like 10. I'm actually not 100% sure, but I'm rude. And the first thing I note when I'm listening to things is the voices. I didn't hate the voices of this podcast. I've tried other ones where I'm just like, I can't vibe with your voice. But I don't know, I guess something about the Australian accent just got a little, specifically with their vocal tones, got a little annoying for me, and I just didn't really keep going. I might finish it up later, but I did not have it in me to listen to like 5 hours worth of media over a couple of days while I was preparing this, because I didn't want to listen to them for that long. And now I feel bad for saying it, but it's too late. We're moving on. November 4, 1988 was when Evil Angels was released. Or as it is known in other territories outside of Australia and New Zealand, I believe it was A Cry in the Dark. So this follows the story. It kind of just opens up with the Chamberlains being living, talking about the fish. And then within like 10 minutes or something, they're already heading on their holiday for the camping, and you see the iconic line. It's pretty short. You see them go in, you see them go to their day-to-day. They reenact a lot of the most like popular pictures you will find, a lot of which I have shared on Instagram and Facebook, also probably on my Twitter. And then that's when you see the iconic line, the "A dingo's got my baby." Michael mentions to Lindy that, you know, he thought he heard something coming from the tent, just some noises, and if she could go check on her. And she's like, she was just asleep, but yeah, sure, I'll go give it a look-see. She goes on over and she sees a dingo and she's like, you know, shoo, get out of the way. And she runs over, goes to the bassinet, and that's when she's like, baby's not here. What is happening? She just kind of starts screaming. Stuff is happening. So the baby is gone. The police arrive. It's 20 minutes in and they have mentioned money multiple times. Like, a little ugly amount of times, just like money, 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 can't afford, won't have to pay, like, and you're just kind of like, I don't understand the fixation. Like, they're sitting at the camp, they're asked to wait by the police, people are searching, and some of the people on the campground that they were speaking to were like, hey, maybe you guys should go to the motel in the area, just like give you guys some more privacy, a little homier of a feel instead of just being so exposed out here. And they're like, no, we have to wait for the police. Also, we can't afford it. They're actually put up at like a hotel in the area. And they're like, hey, you don't have to pay for this. Like, you're in the middle of something. Don't worry about it. And just like other droplets of money that kind of made me feel uneasy. 8 out of 10, I'm probably looking into it too hard, but it just really stuck out to me. The film has sterile. Oh my God, Meryl Streep. And she's acting very cool through all of it, which I know was a problem that people had with her in the media, that she's just very structured, composed. She is given medication to induce milk production and a pump. All logical, I suppose, but the delivery is somewhat direct. It's just direct in speculation. It's literally like the next day or something, and the family, they're doing interviews and they're receiving paperwork to declare Azaria dead. My fave part in this film, which is really an awful part though, is around the 37 minute mark when some random lady pulls one of the Chamberlain boys aside to ask him what really happened while he was out with his grandparents. And it's just like, this is literally it. This is literally it. The big thing with this film, I think, is it offers both sides in an almost like disturbingly good way. It does feed into the speculation, you know, did they do this because of money issues? They did fixate on the fact that he was a pastor, but that he was a cool pastor. And it just really did paint them in a an ugly light, especially at the beginning, with how she's like, okay, I guess I'll just, like, they're literally like, here's the pills so you can lactate so your boobs don't hurt since you're not gonna be breastfeeding because your baby's done. She's just like, oh, okay, cool, thanks. Like, just very chill. But, you know, you can't judge someone's grief. But then it, like, completely pulls the rug from under you and they're just like, she didn't do it. Like, I mean, they show you her being innocent from the beginning, you know, just the, like, I think you look at like the Lizzie Borden one where they don't really show you anything. It just happens. And then they show you the dark one implicating her. And then obviously their miniseries dives into it. But this one shows you the honesty, shows you the media understanding of her. What was also done very nicely is that as everything's occurring, you jump to people watching it on the news, talking about it with their friends, literally walking down the street at work, you know, at a diner. And they're just like, oh, she definitely did it. Oh my God. And like, they're just discussing it in exactly the way that it happens. It very much is analyzing how, as a society, we look at people and judge their experiences. It was a little boring at first. The film was a little slow, but it really did pick up. It just, before I knew it, I was already kind of towards the end of it. And it's really well done. I mean, Meryl Streep is a strong actress. But the reception of this film, the US was all for it, but Australia seemed pretty polarized by the film. I do, however, love the date it was released on, like literally right after they were cleared. September declaration that they're not at fault, November release date. But again, that polarizing effect, I would have to say, comes from a sincere demonstration of what happened, you know, them just camping, things just happen, but then showing you the why people felt uneasy by her with their chillness and how quick they were to interview. Something that the parents kind of like bitched at them about was like, why would you give an interview about that? Why would you do that right now? Lindy and Michael get into an argument where he's like, why would you say that? That makes you look like this. And she's like, I thought I was helping. Like, it's like, you can't do right. She's too chill and isn't talking. She's a bad mom. She's more involved and giving conversation. They warp what she say. She's just feeding us, whatever. So it makes perfect sense. And then obviously at the end, she's cleared. But I'd be interested to see something of this come again. Maybe like I don't go to the cinema very much. I like the cinema. It's fun. I can't really do it here though, because there are not that many English cinemas in my area. Like, I have to go pretty far to go find one, and the times are pretty all over the place. Plus, I'm gonna be real honest with you, I hate paying almost like 10 euro a person to watch a film when I can just buy it, like, or rent it for like $3 once it comes out. So I'm all here for like a mini series, maybe like a three-parter. Let's go, BBC One. You guys are always giving me this stuff, where they kind of go into it and a little more thoroughly, going into what happened after, and the family just literally after it all happened, reaching up to 2012. I mean, Lindy is a very big speaker, which we should get into that right now. These are a little more after notes than anything, but it is also touching on their lives after the event. Both Lindy and Michael remarried. I did mention that he remarried and went about their lives. Michael even had another child, but again, I didn't write down when he got remarried or when the child was born. But Lindy has spent a lot of her life advocating and speaking about her experience and just different aspects of it. I mean, she literally has her website detailing everything, because she's a huge victim here. Like, she wasn't allowed to mourn. She wasn't allowed to then revitalize herself with her new child. She was just, she had her first baby taken, and then she had her second baby taken by, you know, the legal system. And that's really shitty. And it's just, I'm really glad that she speaks for herself, and she went around just talking and making sure that this wasn't brushed under the rug. She went to the US, and that's actually where she met her husband. She was in Washington State for a long time. Another funny thing to note, if you can call it that, is that in any high profile case, people be inserting themselves so hard. So, an Aaron Horsberg came out in 2005 claiming to be a Zarya. That's pretty much it. She was 25 at the time, so like the birth works there. And it was just unsubstantiated, but I am literally loving this energy. I didn't pursue looking into it too much out of choice. I just like, it was ridiculous enough I didn't have to. I'm kind of like, what did your parents have to say? Were you maybe like an orphan? Like, why? Like, what made you think that? I don't understand. It reminds me of all the Anastasia Romanovs of the past, which, bro, I should talk about that. I absolutely love everything to do with the Romanovs. It was something I was very into. But yes, I'm loving that energy of just like, yeah, it was me. All right, goodbye then. Like, there's just that. She said she was Azaria. Can't substantiate it. Thank you. Have a nice day. But on that same energy, some dude, Frank Cole, in 2004, claimed to have shot a dingo who had a baby in their mouth. But I have no idea what is even hip-hop happening with that either. It's just like, yeah, I saw him and I shot at him. It's like, oh, okay. That's like really cool, man. Like, thank you so much for mentioning it. Another set of people I very purposely didn't keep looking into was the Chamberlain children. So Aiden, Reagan, and Kalia. I know they're not kids anymore. Obviously, they were born in the 70s and 80s. But they deserve their privacy. And obviously, the only reason we even know about them is because as children, they were kind of exploited. Again, I go back to the whole, so what really happened? The lady who pulled him. Cool movie to watch. I literally just found it on some random website online. I would recommend watching it. Just, why not? I love watching films. I'm like, yes, I'm just going to go watch it. But what do we think of this case? Is it fair that their tragedy is just a joke to people? I feel like I don't hear about this very often anymore, though. I can't actually think of something recent that had the whole a dingo ate my baby. But it's still sad. I'm just kind of like, oh, brother, that be some pity there, yes. That be some pity. I'm still thinking about the lady who's like, yeah, it's me. Like, just like, hey, it's me, skinny penis. Like, I really love saying that. But I'm pretty sure she was taken by the dingoes. And unfortunately, we didn't find the body because it was eaten. It's gross to think about, but I don't know. Some of the pictures I shared include the bloody outfit, the jumpsuit and whatnot. I tried putting them on some later photos so they're not the first thing to pop up. But bro, what is happening? Australia, anytime I hear anything about Australia, I mean, you know, the whole Florida and Australia thing, I'm not surprised. I knew a dude, I worked with a fellow who's from Australia, and he was just always telling me the like nuttiness of it. And I'm just like, how do you guys even make it past infancy? You guys are just bred very differently, which sounds awful to say, but everything about their area is just like, how do you do that? I remember he told me that there's a story they like to tell tourists of some animal. I don't remember what the name was, but it's like a koala bear and it hangs at the top of trees and they tend to like surround very specific areas. It's like these six trees or whatever. And if you go under their territory, they jump down and start biting you. And he's like, yeah, so you have to be careful. You have to always look up. And he told me this and I was just like, okay, like I wasn't going to question him. Like, all right, whatever. Like, it's fine. He loves talking about weird things that happen in Australia. Lo and behold, like 8 months later, he was just like, ha ha ha, I love all the lies we tell tourists. And I was like, what? And he was just like, oh, I never told you that that was a lie. And I was like, no. And he was like, yeah, it's a lie. And I was just like, I'm not surprised because you're full of shit. And I just like, Australian people are so funny. I don't believe any of you for a second. I walk into things very speculative. But that's why I'm like, how did you guys not believe that one of your animals hurt? Your kangaroos come down and fight people. Literally Google it. Like, kangaroo attack. They just like, one video I saw was of a dude who's parachuting and this kangaroo just comes out, whacks him in the face a few times and leaves. Like, they're just like this. I question nothing from a country that was built on, like, built by criminals. That's another fun thing. I love hearing their theories about their own country. Like, oh, I'm about to say some slightly explicit things, but one thing that this gentleman would always say is just like, yep, it's a country built on rapists and incest. Just, and I'm like, oh my God, why would you say this? And then obviously, genocide because the Aboriginals, but it's wildness. The animal life there is crazy. I really want to go. I am not a zoo person. I do not believe in zoos. I do not think they're correct. Let's not get into my beliefs in that real quick. But I really want to go because hello, Steve Irwin. But I'm so scared. Australia scares the living crap out of me. Kangaroos, giant buggies, dingoes. Whoa. But I'm gonna end this here because I've already gone on a very long tangent about Australia and Australians and just what they be. So thanks for hearing me out. If you can find it in your heart to please go to Apple Podcasts and leave me a review. I think you can also do it in like Stitcher, but just, wherever. But I know that Apple Podcasts is the big one, and that would be so nice of you. Thank you. As always, thank you very much for listening. And if you are ever so inclined, please follow me on Instagram at pardonmyenthusiasm.podcast, Facebook at pardonmyenthusiasm.podcast, and Twitter at pardonmepod. Bye.